big. Tune in to Minocqua's Beast, Channel 6542, for the Miss Muskie pageant.
Who will take home the crown as the fattest girl you've ever seen?
Set your alarm clock for 3:14 a.m. this Saturday for the Miss Muskie pageant. You don't want to miss this star-studded event hosted by cable access legends Todd and Dave.
David, looks like we got Miss Plover coming to the stage. She's pretty fat. What do you think?
Holy cow, slimy Plover, Dave. Look at that.
Look at the girth on that one, Dave.
And the teeth, I tell you. The teeth thing, you know, it's an underbite.
Extra points there, boys. That's my favorite.
There's an overbite and there's an underbite. Let's be clear.
I'm always going over and under. You know what,
Dave?
I mean?
Shut up, Dave.
Be sure to tune in to Minocqua's Beast for the 2023 Miss Muskie pageant.
There she is, Miss Muskie.
Right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. Jaybird, will you be setting an alarm?
Setting an alarm? There she is.
You'll be.
That is an exciting event times 10 in my book, Steve.
If you're not into big muskies, what's the point, you know?
What are you doing it for?
The fatter, the better. So if mm-hmm. that's... I think they just walk them across the stage. They put a little tiara on them, walk them across the stage. Who's got the fattest girl in the room?
Well, I don't know how they do it. I'm tuning in at 3:15 a.m. on that channel because I'm going to find out, I guess. It's going to be great.
That's what's up. It's what it's all about, boys.
Believe that.
Believe that. Anyway, we can finally say... that the catalog is out, the lofty tome that is the 2023 Muskie Shop catalog.
Woo.
You can get it. If you haven't got it, if you're not signed up for it, get it.
Free.
Free to your door. The other cool thing, and all you have to do if you do not receive the catalog, go to the Muskie Shop website, click on the catalog, add it to your cart, and then it'll get shipped out to you.
Yep.
Then also on the Muskie Shop app and on the website, the digital catalog. So let's say you just can't wait and you want to see what's in there. Oh, buddy.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Just thumb on through there, digital.
It's the top link. It's called Digital Catalog. You can see all 150 pages right there.
I'll say this. The Jody, Mike, and I were looking at this the other day when she got her up there, and it was kind of cool just to... It's a different way of viewing the baits. You know what I'm saying? It just feels a little more tactile. So everything at the shop that we got as of today's on there, there's cool. Yeah. There's pictures. I just scrolled past a picture of a Smitty.
There's pictures and writing.
There's pictures and writing. There's a picture of Jake Smith. He's holding a fish. Can you believe it? There's a picture of a man with a fish in a fishing catalog.
Both Smitties came in today for hot dogs.
I bet they did.
Well, it was a special day because Fred got his venison back, and we had venison hot dogs for lunch. They were excellent.
So it'd be safe to say dear wieners.
And the Smitties were invited, and they loved it.
Buddy, I'll tell you what, there ain't a Smitty that's ever turned down free grub.
There you go. I knew it was coming.
I'm calling you out, Jake Smith.
That's crazy. I mean, Russ Smith, Big Smitty, he pulled out one of them shanking knives, started dicing up the hot dog like it was chopped liver. It's actually kind of scary.
Watch me cut up his wiener.
Well, you brought him back to the pen days, I guess. I don't know.
I guess, you know.
A flashback or something, you know.
Just stabbing, grabbing. Yeah. I bet that if I know a Smitty like I know a Smitty, how many did they put in their pockets before they left?
They did go pretty quick. Now,
if you pull up the videotape, they took some with them. I guarantee you that.
Oh, man.
Boys are
no
snackers.
Wonder they won. Yeah, we ran out fast. No kidding.
Stuff. Listen, I've said it once and I'll say it again. The Smitties will stuff their pockets full of wieners. There's your words you can live by, boys.
Poor Jake will be working on Bates tomorrow morning listening to this podcast, and right now I can just see him shaking his head.
You can take it to the bank. The Smitties will stuff their pockets full of wieners. I will see you at the Muskie Shop Bash, July 17th, Jake Smith. Or is it the 15th, Jake? I can't remember.
15th.
It's July 15th, folks.
Yeah.
Muskie Shop Bash, Jake Smith coming from the top rope. He's going to jump off that Smitty sign onto somebody's.
Yeah.
Anyway, goodness gracious, get your catalog. The other thing, massive Titan news.
Mm-hmm.
That's that we got. Oh, boys, can't wait to tell you next week.
Okay.
There's the teaser. But we talked about it today. Little group get together there. Fine folks at Livingston, fine folks at Muskie Shop. It is not long, my friends. It is not long. So sign up for those bad boys. It looks like when I'm looking here, was the Daiwa Bessie?
Of the Bessie, yeah.
They've put out another Daiwa thing. What is this? First, inspired by the story of Bessie of the Lake Erie Monster. Okay.
I tell you what, yeah, those things are hot. I had a guy from France DM me the other day on Instagram about that. He's like, got to get his hands on one. He's putting an order together with some friends there for different stuff over there in France.
France.
Pretty cool.
Over there in France. Hey, we've got another tease, if you will. Another tease. We have a shocking number of European listeners. Whether you guys know this or not, we do.
Yeah.
And boy, do I got something to tell you guys. So here very shortly.
It's good. You're not telling them now, though?
Not
you're
telling them now. No, we got to wait.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So
stay tuned for big news.
Big news. If you're ever there, one of them techno fishermen, where you're ever raving and dancing and whatever it is you do, sweating and, you know, in the bath cows. What do they do in Europe? I have no
they idea. Break dance.
No, not quite.
No.
That's okay. More, it's more, they eat candy and they dance all night. So if you distilled it down to just some simple things, mm-hmm. they know how to have fun over there. So, there might be some fun over there here shortly. Looking forward to it. So I'll let you guys know. I mean, there's thousands of people that listen over there, and that's kind of crazy. So
yeah.
Other than that, you know, folks, we got that. And like I said, beating on the horse. Titans are on the way. So the other thing is this, if you don't like small Titans and you're a big Titan fan, 4 new colors of that boy coming, right?
Yeah.
Right. So that's going to be fun. I think they're on. Yeah, buddy. Those pictures are up. So the 4 new colors, which are Reading Rainbow, which is a rainbow trout, a grape flamethrower. So Joe doesn't sue me. It's just grape flame, but I called it flamethrower. So Booker doesn't sue me. And Wrecking Crew. One of my new faves. And Hot SB Tiger. Hot SB Tiger is the bomb. That's probably the one I throw more than anything. I throw Grape Frame quite a bit, but man, I feel good. I feel confident with the Hot SB Tiger. So those will be here.
So does Johnny B. Yeah. Those are coming. Yeah.
Those are coming.
It is
not Grape Flame. It's Grape Flamethrower. Okay.
So, ouch.
So no one murders me from.
It's hot.
It's hot. Too hot in the hot tub.
Gotta get in the hot tub.
Man, that was funny. Anyway.
Well, you know what this week is? Starting Thursday night, Steve.
Do tell.
The biggest sale of the year.
The Can I say biggest that again? Smell of the year.
The biggest sale of the year starts Thursday night and runs through the weekend. It actually runs through Monday the 20th.
Monday.
Hope you're sitting down for this one.
Put on your shoes because you're about to get knocked off.
15% off everything.
He's dead. Say it
everything.
Again. Here you go, boys.
Everything.
15% off of jerk baits, crank baits, rods. Believe it or not, talking about our Euro folks, well, we got a bunch of them Canadians. If you're up there chasing the illustrious cabbage dragon in Canada. 15% off in Canada on all musky apparel and accoutrement rods. You want Canada stuff? Knock 15% off. If that doesn't knock your shoes off, Jay, are your Keds still on?
What about reels? What about nets?
All of it.
What about meters? Line?
Catalogs. Oh, these are already free.
Oh, they're free. Yeah.
We will pay you. No, we will not. Disclaimer. No one will be paid, including me and Jay. You want, you got it, man. I mean, did you like that?
I almost spit that one out there.
I'm kind of fast, Jay. Anyway,
on his feet, folks.
Quick on his feet. We got the Black Mambas, 15% off.
Ouch.
Boys, anything you want, any way you want it, that's the way we got it. It's going to be, it's the big one. Except for gift cards. Okay, we made that mistake one time.
Yeah, and no live bait. You can't order suckers. Okay, you can't order musky suckers and expect to have them delivered on sale. We got to draw the line somewhere.
So no live bait, no gift cards. Doesn't matter. Does it matter? Is it worldwide or is it just Canada?
No, it's worldwide.
Okay,
sure.
15% off, buddy. You people over there in frickin' Switzerland, you guys over in France, you guys over in those Yugoslavian countries, we get the emails. Get your Yugoslavian, get your bait. Show them Pike who's boss, 15% off. It doesn't get much better than that. Folks, it is the Super Bowl of savings, some might call it.
Yeah.
Super Bowl of Savings 26. JSE ran down the sideline for 15% of savings on a new net. Sorry.
Mega Muskies.
Anyway, goodness gracious. What? Moving on. So, did you watch the Super Bowl?
Yeah, good game.
Yeah.
How about the national anthem with Chris Stapleton? Wow.
That was probably the highlight for me.
Wow.
I respect the Chiefs, respect the Eagles. Neither are my team. I'm not,
a diehard
per se. And I'm definitely not a Cowboys fan, if anybody's asking, but nonetheless, it was just one of those things of like, you just felt what was going to happen there. But yeah, Chris Stapleton, that was awesome. That was awesome.
Blew me away.
Blown away, he says. How'd you feel about Rihanna, Jay? Were you up and dancing?
Didn't care for it, but to each his own, I guess.
Who knows? Whatever. Put it on mute. It's just as good. Mm-hmm. So anyway, goodness, we better get after it here. Time to get after it.
Okay.
Bunch of questions this week. Bunch of the emails. Right.
Okay.
Bunch of emails.
Any worth repeating?
Yeah. That's where I was going with it. Freaking retard. No, that was just a big setup for nothing.
Yeah, there you go.
Moving on.
Please.
About jigging. So, let's crawl down the rabbit hole. Let's get jiggy with it. Ooh. So, let me see if I can get the brain there, because it definitely for you Southern guys, it's the time. There's a time to jig. There's a time to jig. And when you get in this cold water period, I mean, there's not a wrong time, but... now's the right time
to
be doing the jigging routine. So we're going to crawl down this rabbit hole. First and foremost, I know we've talked about it before, but I don't know if we're going to see. If it turns into masterclass, we'll see. We're just going to see how far I can take it, right? I'm thinking here. We're obviously limited in presentations. All right? That's the first thing when I think about jigging is narrowly is it synonymous with a Bondi bait anymore. It really feels that way where you go, if musky jigging comes up, I'm thinking Bondi bait, right? Which are kind of hard to get right now. However, anything's a jig if you put your mind to it, I guess. But I personally do the fuzzy dozits. I love those critters too, right? So there's not just one presentation. I mean, because there's been multiple musky jigs over the years. I think the Bondi is just the one that has become synonymous with jigging. I mean, it's super successful. It does a great job. You can't go wrong there. But for presentation's sake, as we're sort of talking about it, the tactic can be applied pretty much universally, because I'm like, there's some of the Esox Cobra stuff over the years. Birdie makes those big old jig heads for musky sized grubs, right?
Yeah, Kalins. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so you've got options there, and then on top of it, you got tubes.
Yes.
And I love me some tubes, and you can vertically jig a tube with very good results.
Sure.
Right? So, I mean, technically you can dig just about anything that sinks, but as far as like right off the rip, you're not limited just to Bondi bait. Fuzzies are awesome. One thing I'll say about fuzzies is you can take a standard fuzzy, like a 7, right?
Yeah.
And just get you a drill out. I think I've talked about that one time years ago. Get you a drill out, move the back hook up, and then put you a small blade on the back. Now you have a super high hookup ratio vertical jig with that small, what's that, a number 6 Colorado on the back of a Bondi? Maybe a 5? Somewhere in that neighborhood.
It is small. It's smaller than an 8. Yeah, it's in that 6 or 7 range for the tops. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And so that's just a consideration. I'm not saying you got to do that for it to be effective or for it to not be effective. But nonetheless, it's one of those presentations where I just feel like you just get so roped in on that one. And again, no disrespect to the Bondi baits. Love them. Caught a ton of fish on them. Tactically, you've got some other options. Really, a bulldog can be jigged just about anything. We've caught fish jigging Medusas over the years. You know, if it's a sinking rubber bait, you're in the game.
Sure.
You know, you're in the game there. Jay, whatever. What else? Has there been any, like, mass-produced jigs over the years that I'm missing, though? I don't think
so. No, the skirted thing, you know, Bait Rigs has that. You mentioned it a second ago about those Esox Cobra jigs. And it's just like, if I had one, I like that presentation because it's small. And you can run a multitude of different plastics on the end and still have good hookup.
Well, and the
you
thing
can always
the,
modify and have a stinger hook too if you so care to choose to do. But
something I would fling out there on that is that's a really good, you know, you can sort of like hop or yo-yo jigs back. It's very bassy to do so.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that stands out with like a paddle tail on the back, and you're actually fishing like you would fish a bass jig, but musky size too, on that shallower stuff. You know what I'm saying? Where maybe you're throwing that littoral zone or you're throwing a break edge, you can work it back, you know, which is pretty stellar. But for all intents and purposes, as we crawl down the rabbit hole of jigging, you can use just about anything. So I've jigged
spoons. Yeah, and when you mentioned the Fuzzy Dozzets, that's a Shumway product, which is now his brother Bill. Mm-hmm. So it's actually a Fuzzy's Tackle Company product. But right. It's basically, for those that don't know, it's a blade bait. It's a flat, basically a flat piece of metal. It's weighted on the front. It's got two hooks, comes in a couple sizes, and it vibrates intensely on the pull upwards, and on the bottom it'll dart a little bit side to side, you know, like a spoon would. And of course, then there's spoons too.
Well, and that's a whole other rabbit hole for sure, which you could put a 2-ounce egg sinker in front of a spoon and do whatever you want with it on the bottom.
Sure.
But like you said, I personally like fuzzies, and the reason I like it is exactly what you just said. Is, and again, love Bondi, got a boat full of them, but I'm comparing the two. I mean, it's worth talking presentation. When you're down to, you got Coke and Pepsi, Jay, when it comes to jigging, you know, it's not like there's a billion bucktail companies. It's hard to compare, but it's like apples and oranges, Coke and Pepsi on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
That Fuzzy is just a big version of these traditional blade baits that have been so popularized with walleye jigging, right? Mm-hmm. And so many of these baits where you just go, they have that thing. And as much as I like the Bondi bait, it is very much up, down with the blade, right? So you got the displacement of the rubber bait.
Yeah.
Right, which is somewhat thinner. But the bait in and of itself is just displacing water with a little bit of that tail action. Where it seems like the Fuzzy's got that side-to-side dart, especially using panoptics, you can see that it doesn't go the same direction every time.
It's true.
It's a little more random in that regard. Like I said, I like to modify mine with a blade. The other thing that's cool about those and just shooting it out there is because it's just a piece of sheet metal, you can do whatever you want with it, is you can add weight to them, to the body, right? So you could put bell sinkers on that. I've drilled holes through them and just literally poured lead into them, which is, didn't look good, but it worked. So if you're fishing super heavy current, a little bit more modifiable in my book, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're actually able to augment it right there, as far as drilling holes or you know, putting another hole in it. I mean, literally just take your drill, you put another hole in it, you got a place to put split rings and weights if you want or whatever you want to do. So from a modification standpoint, it's there. The other comment I would make is this is hooking ratio.
Okay.
You get them. Right, you get those fish. Yeah, I rubber baits. If I'm jigging a bulldog, right, or I'm jigging a Medusa or whatever it might be, you know, you still run into that same thing we do with the Bondi, where there's teeth involved, there's rubber, and I got to move it.
Correct. Yeah. I see where you're going. Yeah.
Where with this, it's like metal teeth on metal. It's sliding, right? It is going to hit him. So that's the one thing that I feel better about. Where I go, okay. If I get the eat, I'm getting a super high percentage of those fish on that metal blade bait. So, you know, as neophyte of a tactic, from a tactical standpoint, the jigging is, which is raising and lowering the rod. We'll get into it in a minute. You can't add in too much stuff, right? And I feel like pretty much with any musky presentation, the erratic or different or darting or a little unpredictable is what seems to get the job done. That's why I like those baits. So for whatever it is, you know, other mods I've done to that as well. And, you know, where they've poured the lead on the head of that thing, it's a flat spot. Years back, I actually drilled into that J and put like an insert weight, you know, like you get the Suic kits where you can put your own insert weights in.
Sure.
You can drill a hole in that and put that socket in there with a little JB weld. Now you got a place you can screw whatever you want into.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you now have this jig that's rigged up for whatever you're encountering, especially if you're somebody like me where you fish in current quite often. Right? It's hard to get a bait to stay where you want it, where it'll get ahead of the boat. So that's a point of why I sort of have that preference. Again, Bondi baits are awesome. Yeah. Bondi baits great. You can easily hang a bell sinker off of those things. As far as tactically and tackle wise, one thing that I've done in recent years, and I shared it with a couple of my friends and got really good feedback from them. One of my good friends that fishes Lake St. Clair all the time, shout out to Amish Dave. He does not eat them. He is Amish, but he doesn't eat all of them, by the way. So they get a bad rap. He's not a musky eater. Even though he is Amish, he listens to the podcast, so you know he's sort of fringe, decent. But I give him crap all the time.
And he sent us a great Christmas card too. Really, thank you, Amish Dave.
Amish Dave, he made it himself, I'm sure, just like his clothes. But anyway, with those Bondi baits, notoriously, hooking ratio has been something that's been talked about, right, with the stock hooks.
Mm-hmm.
I figured this out a few years back and we were playing with it. Are those super short shank sevens from Tyrant? There's the only short shank. I can't say short shank hardly. There's the only short shank 7-0s that I'm aware of. And that is a heck of a Bondi bait hook. And has been dynamite. You know which ones I'm talking about, Jay?
Yeah.
Where are they under here? Do we have
hooks?
Them? Hooks. Well, that would be a wonder. Well, you know, you'd think I'd remember from.
But you're right. You're not wrong about the whole, you know, hook thing. You know, it's like Mustad had a round bend hook. It's a short shank, and it's like they're gone. They don't make them in big sizes anymore.
Well, you never know. You know, it's enough. We only have 110,000 individual SKUs here.
So. Mustad. Yeah, literally does. It's incredible.
You know, it just never ends. Tyrant tackle treble hooks. 7-0. Boom. There's a 6 and a 7. Sometimes a 6 is good. There's a 5. That might not be the right one. But nonetheless, those are the ones I'm talking about. You can find them on the site. I love those hooks because it's like this massive hook, dude. And they don't foul. That's the biggest thing, is like upping hook size on a lot of baits, what you run into is hook fouling. And with really short shank hooks, now it's like not a problem. So you've got a lot of point and a lot of bend. By the, once you get hook penetration, that's what, yeah, the thing with a bigger hook is they have to fling it further to shake it. You know what I'm saying? So once you've got them down there, it's going to take a lot more motion. So, you know, if you can get your hands on some of those 7-0 short shanks, on those Bondi baits, they're really good. The only other terminal tackle thing I would say, with the fuzzies, is I'll use the 4-0 short shank and the 5-0 short shank, right? Because there's no rubber there. So I'm not trying to pull this bait through teeth where I'm getting that better hookup ratio and I don't have to upsize the hooks. And off the top of my head, as I'm just sort of riffing here, the other commentary I make, I like to beef up the split rings on any jigging bait I'm using. And you'll hear, and you've heard it, Jay, over the years, so many people, you know, a muskie did this, a muskie broke that. In most instances, that's because the bait got caught in the net, right? And now you've got a stationary point that it's pulling against and all this crap, right?
Or, yeah, one thrash and it, yeah, yeah, something's got to give.
You hooked it, but, you know, it wasn't a muskie and you hooked a log. We've all heard it, you know. It's like, especially making baits and all this crap, you hear this stuff. In jigging, I've seen split rings get pretty stressed pretty fast, because if you're jigging in 10 feet of water, guess what? You're 9 feet from the fish in most cases, right? So you're taking a full-on strike that's not a figure eight strike vertically, and they're violent. And I think that's probably, it took me a long time to wrap my head around back to Bondi. I mean, there's some early videos or some years back where he was doing these videos of these early Bondi stuff, and he's saying, you know, hold on, because these strikes are, you know, the baddest you ever feel. And you're like, okay, let's see. And he wasn't lying. they're I mean, jigging strikes, if a fish comes in hot and he hits it hard, that's about as rough and tumble as it gets, right? That is just a rock your world kind of boom kind of deal. So
sure,
I like to up that stuff. Just the heavier you can do it. What is it? The triple Wolverine triples, right? Or the three around split rings. And I think there's some other split rings there. Just beef them up. It is not that the factory hardware is bad. Not what I'm saying. I'm getting at, I like to feel secure that this stuff can take the abuse of multiple fish where I'm not having to play with it, right? So I'm pulling it up here. Wolverine tackle. There's every size imaginable there.
Yeah, just eyeball your baits. I mean, you know, have a different size selection of, you know, split rings in your kit on the boat. On the boat.
You
don't have to do it at home. Just examine stuff. It's like, oh, this thing's awful light. Yeah. Boom, put a new one on. It's worth it.
Oh, and one of these days, we've gotten emails about it before. One of these days, I'm going to have to put together like a mod box. Like, we need like a repair box or a mod box. Like, here's Steve's repair box. Blah. Here's the mod box. Blah. You got to have that stuff in the boat. But like I said, before I take them out, I'm just going to beef that stuff up, because sometimes those strikes are just taking everything to the hilt. Before we get into tactics, I'm just riffing off the top of my head, Jay.
I know.
Before we get into tactics, I would talk about rods. And always talking, always throwing my 9.6 heavy, 9.6 extra heavy shield rod. That's the bread and butter. If I'm seriously jigging nonstop, though, like if I'm dialed in, I have been here as recent, so while we're talking about this, dialed in on a very, very, like, this is, I'm jigging majority of the day, shorter rods. Right? It seems like I get that connection faster, right? I don't need to get the jig away from the boat in any capacity. I'm not concerned with that.
True.
But when these fish hit, I want to instantly be to the backbone of the rod to get hook penetration.
Right? Mm-hmm.
I want to just, because it happens so fast, it happens so violently, I want to be able to get that crank on that fish. Now, I'll jig with my 9.6 heavy. I'll jig with my 8.6 extra heavy. But when it comes to like, okay, this is what I'm doing, right? We're dialed in enough on a seasonal bite where you go, this is the game for the next while. I will just set up a rig for that. The other point when it comes to terminal tackle, rods, reels, all this stuff would definitely be reel speed. You know, I'm always advocating you don't have to have a fast reel. When it comes to jigging, if they hit if they hit up and they come up with the bait, which I'll talk about more momentarily, but if they take it off the bottom, they're coming up, you have to catch up to those fish immediately to even get a hook in them.
Absolutely essential to have a really high gear ratio, really fast reel.
Yeah. Yep.
And back to the rods real quick, Steve.
Yeah.
You're talking about the short rod. You're talking about, what do you say is ideal? When you said short rod, you mean like 8 footer?
8, 7, 6
maybe for a jigging rod?
Sorry for that breakup. I don't know what's going on with that. For me, I'm going that 8 foot extra heavy.
Yeah.
And
you know what I like about that? Because I was just thinking about the presentation. A lot of times, you know, throughout the day, you've got one or two rods, and they're, you know, the long rods in the boat, mm-hmm. the stuff you normally use for everything. And it's like, okay, we're going to jig for a little while. Mm-hmm. And you don't actually dig and pull out, you know, the proper equipment. But the thing is, with the super long rods, people are going to have a tendency to overwork the bait and take up way too much line, you know. Sometimes you want to move that bait 1.5 feet, 2 feet, maybe up to 3 feet if you're running a fuzzy duzzy play bait. That's no max. More than that.
No, it's most of the. And just to get there, that's the problem with jigging.
Yeah,
is you'll see guys that'll get a Bondi bait and they're sweeping this thing from the water to above their head.
Sure.
Not the appropriate presentation. If we are dialed in, and we'll talk about in a moment when, where, and why to jig.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're jigging, we're looking for fish that are negative and neutral and bottom tight, mm-hmm. right? We don't want to make them have to come that far off the bottom. Most of my jigging fish, I'm moving that rod 18 inches, which is what a fuzzy or a Bondi bait's 7 or 8. So 3 body lengths max. Very small movement. Very small movement. Touch the bottom up. Just a short little sweep. Like you were saying, that shorter rod will let it control that a little bit better. And then when you get the take, you're going to connect with that fish. We don't have to take any bend out of that rod. Right?
Sure.
And so that would be probably the first and foremost thing I think most people get wrong when they take jigging on is we're going for this big action. And you just have to relegate yourself and go, if we're to the point where jigging is our primary mode of operation, right? It's our modus operandi. This is what we're doing. We're jigging. We have contemplated, we have, you know, digested the scenarios, made an assessment, we need to be bottom tight and fishing for these fish. Don't make it hard on them. First and foremost, don't. I've seen it. I've watched it on Panoptic so many times where somebody's hopping this bait 4 feet in the air. A muskie comes and looks at it, and I'm like, there's a fish, and they're still doing this. And he never comes off the bottom. He sort of watches it, and he just slinks away, right? Where if you're keeping it down there, bottom contacting up. Bottom contacting up.
Yeah, because the thing's going out of sight. It's just right. too much
it's
for
too
him.
Much.
It's just way too wild.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it becomes a bit overkill.
Interesting. Sure.
But, you know, like Jay had said, just keeping a small rod sweep, again, easier with the shorter rod. The other point, to reiterate it with the shorter rod, is just simply going to be better hooking ratio. Hopefully, and to the hookups, there's two. He hits it down, you can't miss him, right? If a muskie hits that thing and he takes it to the ground, right, or he takes it forward or backwards or wherever, man, it's the best strike you're ever going to feel. It's 30 inches feel like they're 80 inches, right? If he picks it up off the bottom and comes to the surface with it, you just go, there's slack line, and you got to reel into that fish and then just rip it one way or another, right? So you're sort of, your back's against the wall on how to execute that. You know, again, if he goes down with it, it's the hand of God. You'll know it's a strike. There's no question. You do have to watch for just this. The jig disappears, if you will, right? The jig just simply disappears. You're working this. Go, wow, I don't feel that anymore. Wow, why is this all this slack line happening? Holy crap, there's a fish, right? So you need to be paying attention for that, really more so than anything. You can't miss that downward, that violent strike. But back to the short rod, back to the really fast reel, is if I'm jigging it and I'm very confident in my bottom topography, I know my structure, right? Whether I have live imaging or I'm watching my down scan or whatever it might be. If I'm hitting bottom, I'm working this thing appropriately, and then out of nowhere, oh Lord, now we need to reel up, because that fast reeling, I've connected with, I would say I'm 50-50 on this fish that bring it up, Jay. Straight out.
Okay.
You know, of by the time it registers, by the time I reel into the fish, and then I guess which way to pull the hook. Right. And I don't have a great, there's not like, okay, obviously if your line's coming up but it's going forward, you know, you could tell, or backwards, but most of the time your line's just, there's nobody home. Your jig just goes away. Right. And you just got to reel into it. You feel the fish and you just janking, right? You just light it up, whatever you can do. And I think a lot of times those fish are difficult to hook because they've grabbed the top of the bait. You know, I don't have any authority to stand on that, but from seeing a lot, of torn up Bondi baits, you know, and other jigs where I go, well, there are not teeth marks over the back of this thing. However, right, there are now. So it just feels like some of those fish is like you're setting that bait and he's got the top of the bait where the hooks are, you know, on the outside perimeter of his mouth, unless he's absolutely hogged it.
You know, they're hitting it on the way down. The thing's falling dramatically quicker than any jerk bait will fall, or any crankbait's going to earn bucktail. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that makes sense that they're going to maybe hit the top more often than dead center mass.
Well, that's the thing on the ones that are coming up. The ones that are going down, like the bait's falling and they hit it as it's plunging down. Again, you can't miss them. I think sometimes you're right near him. We're jigging. You lift it up and he hits it as it's going up, and then he continues to go up. That's the ones I'm talking about, right? He's swimming right directly at your feet. Countless times have I seen a muskie with a Bondi bait coming right at me, reeled into him, and again, 50-50, right? 50-50. I've heard some guys that put hooks on the back of Bondi baits just for that. So if that's something you want to do, you can put an extra split ring. There's the line attachment on the back of that bait. You can run an extra split ring off that and put a, you know, some guys will put like those little short shank, mustad, the same ones that are on Shallow Invaders right there, to take care of that problem. I haven't done that yet. I feel like I get enough fish, or I want to avoid leader fouling for clients, but that's just something to consider.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the deal. That's why the short rod, the other thing I'd say is this. On my like dedicated, this is my jigging setup, I will run 100-pound braid.
Okay.
And the reason for that is, man, when you get those things stuck, they're stuck. They're stuck, right? You're jigging. Maybe you have live imaging, maybe you don't, but you're not paying attention. Now you're in a tree that's on the bottom in 25 feet of water or whatever it might be, right? It's not the same as, you know, snagging a crankbait or a bucktail where you can drive your boat over there and get behind it, right? If you've hooked that bait directly up into something, it's far harder to get out. And so I like to have 100-pound braid and just beef everything up. It basically at that point I'm just looking to bend the hooks, and that would be just the comment there, is just running a little bit heavier on that specific setup. You know, definitely a 6-3-1. What's the Tranks high gear, Jay? That's when I run. I can't remember what the gear ratio is on that bad boy.
Who cares? But it's 40 inches per turn. It's high.
It's the fastest one. Is it? Yeah. Is it 40?
Yep.
Wow. Okay. So.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You know, so that's what I'm sort of using on that setup. So it'd be the 8 foot extra heavy shield rod, 100-pound braid in that guy. The other thing, man, too many things. I'm just, again, riffing off the top of my head, is jig rippers. That's worth talking about as far as target terminal tack on setup. I've had some experience with them. Not the biggest fan, right? Probably because I've been gripping the foregrip of musky rods for 25 years or whatever the heck it is, or 41 my whole life, right?
Yeah, okay, well, yeah.
And been jigging with fuzzies before the jigging became like the super thing. It changes the rod angle in your overall placement. However, what is cool with them when I've used them is you're switching the way your radius and ulna are setting, right? So it alleviates some strain, and so you're using, it feels like you're using your bicep far more than different muscle groups.
No, and they're flexible. You can place it anywhere you want and mess around with different angles. And a ton of people in the jigging type of presentation are huge fans of the jig ripper. There's giant. It's just like, if there's one application that they really want to put that to, it would be jigging, you know, as a huge benefit.
Well, it alleviates fatigue. Like I said, I mean, if I'm on a solid jigging bite, I'll put that thing on the boat where I can just, you know, force screw it onto my foregrip if my arm's just killing me after a while.
Sure.
My problem with that is now, and this is just commentary about these pistol grip things, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever. Everybody's got a pistol grip rod now. That's cool. It changes how you set the hook, and it changes that mechanic, right? And if you just take and make a fist right in front of your body, right, and you try to set the hook, and you're holding something vertically or at a slight angle even, it changes that mechanic opposed to the side sweep, right? It's harder to sort of use your hips in that hook set. And I'm definitely, when it comes to hook sets, it's all in the hips, in the words of Chubbs from Happy Gilmore. But if you watch my hook sets, I'm turning my body into those fish to try to generate more torque, which is power. That's my, again, I could sit here and argue until you're blue in the face, but I've been caught using jig rippers plenty of days. But when I get a strike on a jig ripper, I have to drop that rod angle even further to bring that up. And I've actually, funny story, hit myself in the face with the reel multiple times, is why I stopped using them. So think about it. You're holding that right in front of you. Take your hand as if we're holding a jig ripper or doing something else, right? And you've got your open hand and you got this rod thing in there. When you go to set that rod, you're setting into your own chest, right? If I've got a rod and I've rotated my radius and all, now I'm holding on the foregrip, right? When you move your bicep, those muscle groups, it goes across your body instead of directly up. So it, just as far as generating power of how you sort of snap reflex that, those twitch muscles, it's a different angular motion, right? Flat out. So if you take your hand and you open palm it right in front of you and bring that muscle up, it's going to snap your hand or your wrist over to your shoulder. Whereas if you snap your bicep up with a jig ripper, it's bringing right at you, right? So there's less range of motion up and down. Maybe. I don't know. I've not measured the angular nature of it, but in my guess, quick guesstimate, the range of motion is less than moving up and down than it is at an angle sideways from an open palm standpoint when you're sitting across your body. That would be my commentary. Take it for what it is.
Sure.
JD, are you sitting there with your hand in your open palm and swinging your arm around like I am?
I'm practicing.
Yeah. Yep. You see the difference?
Yeah, I do.
Lots of practice. Jay's got thousands of hours jigging here, folks. He's dialed in. He's ready to kill. Anyway.
I love jigging.
Moving on quickly from gear. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the where, when, and why. I am not of the ilk that jigging is a last case resort. right? I feel like the guys that are dialed in jigging know exactly what I'm saying, where you go, this is a substantial presentation that's patternable and useful throughout the year, right? I feel like the vast majority of people that are unsuccessful jigging break it out when nothing else has worked, okay?
The same goes for trolling. I totally agree.
So I'm not going to take it from that standpoint. If we were throwing bucktails and we were doing this and doing that, whatever. Take it from a structural standpoint. I've been doing a ton of, I was about to say it and I don't want to give it away. I've been doing a ton, Jay, of pecking at my computer keyboard here as of late, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in doing so, rehashing a lot of the concepts we've talked about on the podcast for years. The biggest podcast we've ever done, the structure fishing one. Every decision that I'm making is based on structure and adhering to the tenets of structure fishing that muskies, like all other predatory fish or game fish, seek or call deep water their home, and they move mm-hmm. into the shallows and then they move back out. It totally adheres to what happens with jigging. Heck, dude, there's that old Bondi video. I don't even know if he was going down the structure rabbit hole, but he's alluding to it in a video from years back where he says, he puts it as perfect as you can. He goes, you'll be on this hot bite on a weed bed in the morning with bucktails, and then it magically disappears. Then what do you do until the evening?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm not speaking for him, but I think conceptually he went, well, where are these fish? What are they doing? How do I target them? Right. So muskies are adhering to daily movements from deep water refuge, their dormant, their habitable zone, where they want to be, into the shallows and then back out. So any time, right, that is outside of prime time should be considered a jigging time, okay? So if you're adhering to structure, the question becomes a matter of this, because you go, that's the same sort of the tenets I've thrown out there for trolling, right?
Right, right.
If muskies are not shallow, we need to troll, okay? Fantastic. Well, you know, notorious Matlock headlock fan here. Those don't work that great with 150 feet of line out to hit the bottom at 25 feet when muskies are negative and neutral during a cold front. Right? They don't work too well past X, Y, and Z depths. It's speed. So we now have that problem where we're trying to rectify running depth with speed and a triggering speed for muskies. So with that in mind, that call becomes, because we have three methodologies at this point. We need to come up with some more, by the way, because we got casting, trolling, and jigging being the outlier here. So if muskies are adhering to, as they will, the structural rules, where are they located on structure and or the cover associated with structure? They're always on structure. Cover may or may not be there. What are the seasonality cues telling us? What is the seasonal pattern we should be looking for? Then what are the climactic, the situational cues telling us what are going on, right? So if muskies are very sluggish, they're going to be negative to neutral due to frontal movements. They're going to be negative to neutral due to a litany of factors that put them outside of my target speeds and target depths for trolling. Whammo, bammo, where does it leave me, Jay? Jigging. Okay? So as convoluted as that may sound, it's a matter of efficiency. And when I've been pecking at my keyboard, Jay, you know what's going on here. I've been pecking at a keyboard for months.
Oh, of course I do.
Pecking at it. The biggest thing I keep coming back to is angling efficiency, right? Everything is a game of efficiency. What is the most effective way to present to muskies, right, that keeps me in the game and in front of them the most? That's the call you got to make on it. Whether we're talking jig, we could be talking fly fishing, we could be talking doing cartwheels. What's the most efficient way to be in front of a muskie? So for me, I'm making that call based on what am I going to have to do in a trolling scenario to approach these fish outside of prime time. So even in a bad cold front, right, muskies might move up to the mid zone. They might not come all the way into the shallows, but they move midway up And so we got some morning casting, or we've got some prime time, or there's a major, or there's a forage movement that takes place that says, hey, we need to present in this area. What am I going to do the rest of the day, and how am I going to cover area the most effectively? Mm-hmm. Now, that pretty much means we now have a decision to make, just call a spade here, between jigging and trolling, right? So we need to make a decision in efficiency, okay? What are we looking at as far as structure, actual topography? Like, what are we looking at? If we're looking at a break line and we're confident that muskies are holding deeper than 12 feet, right? You're going to look at your trolling presentations and you're going to go, okay, what could be effective here? What does that entail? Does it entail me back trolling? Does it tell me trolling, motor tailing? Does it mean I have to do X, Y, and Z versus jigging where I can advance my trolling motor? I'm sort of making that decision on the fly or doing both, right? So I'm not making the decision whether to troll or jig based off of a gut feeling or based off of just I need to catch a muskie. I'm basing that off. I've already done my seasonal patterning. I know where they're at, and I know based on conditions where they should be, right? So we're not exploring. We're not looking for fish. We're dialed in some capacity. So if I know that muskies are at the 12 foot, let's say they're 12 to 15, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
12 to 15 feet is limiting in the world of muskie trolling, in my opinion, right? As far as baits that are going to run well and be superbly effective and actually hit the depth of 12 feet consistently, Jay, and be bottom tight for like a tick and click, we're pretty limited in all actuality. Okay, I'm not looking at the trolling charts here. I'm just going off of what I do on the boat without augmenting, without using extra weight or extremely long lines. You know, a big fork reef digger. What else, Jay? The old school stuff like a man's 25 stretch. I'm trying to think of baits that will get down deep and still allow you some boat control without having 150 feet of line out.
Yeah, there's
not a ton.
And, yeah.
Well, get a depth rater down to 12 and call me. It doesn't happen that easily. You know, I mean, maybe let me look. Let's see what we say here. I just don't feel like 12.
Checking the trolling charts?
Yeah, I am. But I mean, just as far as the way I'm running my boat, I don't go, wow, that's a easy 12. Depth raters in my mind, strikers, depth raters, a lot of that stuff. I mean, 8, 10. But I'm talking like we need to hit that 12. We need to zigzag out into 14 with bottom contact. Probably not the first one out of the box for me. I'm trying to think. Like a tough shed's not going to do it. Believer's not going to do it. I mean, I know in theory they will do it. Don't write me an email. I know it can be done.
Big Cisco kids. Those get down a little bit deeper. I like those. That's a good trolling lure. Runs okay. Really great slow, too.
For a JBO, straight 6-inch depth rater, right?
Oh, straight baby? Okay.
Straight. No, just straight. I need 80 feet of line to consistently hit 12 feet, right? So that's a substantial amount of line out while trolling, but that's also running at the speed of 3.5.
Quick.
So what I'm getting at here, it's not that a depth rater can't hit that. I'm going, if these fish are negative and neutral due to a cold front or some climatic thing, or like right now in the south, we're fishing 40-degree water. Now we got a problem, right? So if I need to be doing 2, would I need to hit 12? You see what I'm saying? It's a matter. It's not that these baits won't do it, but at the appropriate speeds for the seasonality, and I'm, you know, whether I set it or not, that's where my stupid brain is. It is often hard to hit those depths. Like you said, a Cisco kid will get down there. Obviously, you could use a countdown, blah, 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 blah. But for all intents and purposes, if I'm moving slow and I'm presenting slow, now we have the decision between, is it worth the effort to get baits down to where they are in the trolling zone, or do I jig? Now, the other conversation in the boat should be, what are my trolling restrictions, right? So if you're a one for one, who gives a crap? Do both, right? But when you become restricted by lines, I think jigging becomes even more important for me, where, Jay, you've been in the boat where it's like, we got 3 guys in the boat, but we can only troll 2 lines.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we could have more baits in the water jigging or somebody's throwing big rubber to open water the other two guys jig, that's something to consider as far as a matter of angling efficiency. So I've beaten that horse to death, but I'll move on. So making that decision for me goes, how hard is it going to be consistently get my baits down here? The other consideration before I completely move on here is bottom tightness. You know, if I'm confident, I've paid attention to my electronics, I've used live imaging or my down scan or my side scan, I know bait, you know, all the forage is bottom tight. So subsequently muskies are going to be bottom tight. If it's a game of the tick and click, it depths past 10 consistently, and I need to hit slow speeds, I'm thinking the jig. So from there, when I'm setting up for jigging, we've got our terminal tackle. We got some ideas on zones. I think boat control becomes just as important as it does with trolling passes, right? So when we make a good trolling pass, we're going to work up and down the break, right? We're not just going to hit a break and completely contour unless we are absolutely, there's always a caveat in musky fishing and I hate it. There's no absolutes. But if we are absolutely positive that we will contact a feeding musky by keeping our bait right at 10 feet, right? Unless we're absolutely positive of that due to prior success, we need to be veering in and out of things, right? I like to implement that in my jigging, you know, if I'm jigging break lines, I like to implement that in my jigging just for the fact that I'm covering the different areas of the break in the same nature. And you can start patterning things, especially with watching your down scan or your live imaging, where you're going to be able to see if you're contacting fish. And obviously, let's say you slide into 10 and you slide out to 14, right? You sort of make this slow snake and pass with your trolling motor. If you're contacting them at 14, well, guess what? You dialed in a little bit. So don't come out the gate and go, I'm going to jig 10-foot break lines today because I know they're there. Unless, don't say you know they're there until you know they're there is what I'm getting at, right?
Sure, right.
So in the same methodology, the same manner, using your trolling motor to zig and zag on those break lines, you will start seeing the pattern emerge through misses or strikes or catches. So feeding in and out, like I said. Now, when you do that, this comes into sort of the presentation thing. I like to make what I like to just kiss the bottom with the bait every time, right? There are occasions where you just need to let that bait fully hit the bottom and boom, up and down, right? In this big, creating like a muck cloud or a dust cloud at times.
Yeah, right.
But for me, in general, I just like that bait to just touch the bottom. It doesn't have to really smack it. I just want to sort of kiss the bottom every time I'm bringing that bait up and down.
Because again, you're fishing for negative and neutral fish, and these things aren't looking for the loudest, most, you know, disturbing, mm-hmm. wild, crazy action. They're looking for subtle.
Right. It's subtle. It goes, you're putting it down there and it's finesse where they're going, I can eat that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
I could eat that. Well, why sure. not? Give it a shot. You know,
it's easy. It's easy. It's right there.
It's not advancing much. It's only bopping mm-hmm. up and down a little bit. I can tag it and move on with my life. So,
yeah.
But just
sorry, that was funny.
Yeah, I mean, that's just not that they're thinking, but that's what they're thinking. You know, but I want it to. I don't need this cloud explosion. Sometimes that works. We can get there, but. Just subtly touching the bottom and up and down. Again, my general movement, 12 to 18 inches, right? Mm-hmm, unless mm-hmm. something comes in hot and some fish comes in on your, and you can see these, I keep saying on your downscan, if you jig directly under your downscan sonar, you will see a continual line of your bait, right?
Yeah.
And then if you see a far larger arch come in, guess what it is?
right?
So there's been panoptics for jigging since before there were panoptics. Like, there's a fish. It's just slightly delayed. You go, there he is. Right? So if you jig right under your downscan sonar in the front or back of your boat, you have a live image is what I refer to that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you got a fish that comes raging in and he wants it faster, then obviously faster. It's not that it has to be this small motion all the time. But with that being said, that seems to be general, the application where we're targeting more of these negative or neutral fish. But, you know, so we're going to veer in and out, and we're going to, as we go out to that 14-foot break, feed a hair more line out, right? Feed a little bit line, so we're constantly have that same bounce off the bottom, and so it's a little bit more active. Because for me, if you just get on one brake line or float down a river channel, whatever it is, and it's consistent, and you're just doing this up and down motion all day long, you're going to give up, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this keeps you. You have to pay attention. Am I touching bottom as I come up? Right, we move from 10 out to 14 and back in and back out. You're making small adjustments with your reel, you know, and picking up line, letting line out as we're bouncing up this until we dial in, and that's going to keep you a little bit more engaged on that end of things. But like I said, if you don't have live imaging and jigging is ridiculous. It's a video game. It's the silliest thing you've ever seen. But if you don't have that and you got the downscan, man, it's just as effective. I did it for years. Did it for years and years and years ago. Put the bait right under the down scan. You see it. You see him coming in. So, you know, that would be a typical game plan there. You know, you don't always have to be. It doesn't always have to be a cold front scenario, however. Let's say we're really dialed in and we know we're rocking these things on a point. We come out and it's a hot morning. You know, things are really good. It's just boom, boom, boom. You know, you move three, you catch two, right? And then they magically disappear. I have on multiple occasions said, you know what? Let's jig down this point. These fish were hot and heavy on this thing. From structural, the tenets of structure fishing have told me these fish have moved out off this point somewhere on it, right? Instead of rigging up for a big trolling pass, you just smack a fuzzy dozen on, you know, and you just work down this point. And I've stuck other fish going down the point before, right? So it should be that omnipresent option for you where you can just go, hey, man, when that bite slackens off, we're following these fish down structure. Maybe it's just easier for us to follow them down this in a jigging methodology, right? And you can really, what I like about jigging, and we talked about trolling and jigging and making that decision, you know, trolling, it can be very precision. It can be very, very dissecty. You can really slice a place up. But jigging can just be absolutely finite. It's the sharpest point you have where you go, I can get in such nasty detail, right? To the point of you can find spot on things and spot lock and bounce the jig over top of the same thing all day if you wanted to, right? So you're able to present, you're able to control that bait and keep it subsurface the entire time. So if you feel like that's an option, that should be in your wheelhouse where we go casting. Maybe we go to jigging before we go to trolling. If it was a hot bite and we need to move out again, yes, the argument could be made. You could turn right around and throw a bulldog to the outside point, right? But if that's not working and you think these things have gone from shallow hot bite to maybe they're tight, they're cover tight because, you know, how many days have you been on the water, Jay? And the morning looks really good, right?
Yep.
And the things I'm thinking about where I go jigging, jigging, jigging. It rained last night. What? Overnight storms, right? We come out and the thing's tapering off right in the morning. Been dealing with it. I've dealt with it for years, right? And as the sun's coming up, there's more energy in the air and it starts burning off and clearing out the rest of this storm. So we got a little cloud cover and we got sun up and things were good. And then it turns into the full blown post frontal by, you know, 9.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. Not untypical. It's not some crazy scenario where nighttime storms and we get a good morning bite and it's over with. Over with after that. A lot of times I'm thinking it's hard situationally to admit to yourself, you go, man, it was hot this morning and now it is just a dead zone instantaneously. I address a lot of those situations with jigging just based upon obviously time on the water, but from the experience or the standpoint where I go, ugh, if I witness the shift in cloud cover and it is harsh, right? And I can feel the temps drop and I can feel it getting nasty. And there was some hot movers or we caught one or whatever happened that morning. Trying to get ahead of it, right? Trying to get ahead of it via jigging. Another concept I'd say is this, is rivers. It is hard to troll a river, my friend. It is hard. It can be done.
Sure.
Whole other conversation. I might have talked about it on a podcast, might not. I don't remember. But trolling rivers effectively that have substantial current is very difficult, right? that is where I think I'd probably, I would say 60-40 I'll spend on Rivers jigging in the middle of the day.
Sure, sure.
And that's, you know, on a lake, if I got a bowl shaped lake or something with ledges and whatever, yeah, I mean, or a reservoir, you know, we got that bad, let's say we had that same scenario, that morning storm peeled out, you know, it rained last night, thunderstorm last night, we got a little hanging cloud, blah, blah, blah. And that crap peels out in the morning. You know, I might not immediately go with the jigging. You know, I might do my due diligence with trolling before I got there and I'm jigging a hump or a bump or something like that, right? In the lake, it's far easier to troll. But, you know, put me on current. I'll go from bucktails to jigging. That, you know, that's my next step. I go, okay, this bite's over. They're down. Somebody throw a bulldog where I jig out of the nose of the boat. So that's a consideration. If you're fishing current areas, you're drifting any river. And the other thing I'm saying, this is in rivers. Holy crap, man. It doesn't have to be deep either. Right? You don't have to be over the deepest holes. You can jig 6 feet down. And I've seen often where we've got fish that are on those shallow zones. They're on the shallow break line. Most rivers have, you know, most rivers are eroded in the middle and shallower on the edges. Right? And so, you know, once that casting bite wears off and you go, where did they go? Well, they went to the center. They went to the channel, whether it be the first major break line from the edge or they went dead to the middle of the channel, and they become hard to target where a traditional move, like what I was just saying, is going to be that trolling pass. Well, that's kind of out of the question just based upon, you know, current. I mean, if you have any substantial current, your running depth of your lures change dramatically, right? And
true.
So the running depth of your lure has changed, and now the action of your lure has changed dramatically. Now, I'd be remiss to not mention at times current can be used to get shallower baits down deeper, which is kind of handy, right? But to me, efficiency, I just go, I might as well just let the current take me, pick a break line. We try the first contact point, or we try the main channel. We just drift this thing and jig up and down it. Bam, bam, bam.
Sure,
bam,
much
bam,
more bam. Controllable.
Much
absolutely.
More control. So again, from a standpoint of angling efficiency, if there's current present, wow, probably the easier route, the path of least resistance is just, you know, let that thing take you. And at that point, you're just kind of correcting your boat with your trolling motor because everything's sort of even keel. You know, there's some finer points you can make there, but it sort of makes it easy. I would say that the main thing as far as current, though, plays in my mind is pacing. You never want that jig, like, I don't want the jig ever getting away from me, right? So I want it to be vertical at all times to some varying small degree, right? So
sure,
you're not, yeah. It's not going to be perfectly there every time, the entire time. But, you know, if you find like you're lagging behind or getting ahead, you need to compensate because you need that control, because the entire action of the bait's going to change dramatically if it's getting away from you or getting behind you. Let's say you don't have a lot of current, right? You got a little meandering river or whatever. You know, if you're on the trolling motor and you're getting ahead of this bait, now you're just dragging it off the bottom. It's not even hopping. It's just banging its nose off the bottom, right? You're dragging mm-hmm. it. So you need to find that pacing, right, where it keeps the bait over you. Again, I've been doing that for a lot of years just simply with the downscan sonar. That's enough to, if it stays in that window and you're in that ball game and you see he's staying about the same place, you're good. And you just need to sort of special attention to your line angle. And you'll see the line angle change just from your rod. If you're consistently standing relatively the same place the entire time, you go, wow, my line angles change dramatically. You might need to compensate with your foot pedal, because sometimes, Jay, some of these southern reservoirs, they can be moving a little bit more than you think they are, right? So
okay. That's a
special concern there, whether it be a reservoir or a river, just keeping that line angle correct. You know, fuzzies, on occasion, I will say this, where they will walk away, right, on the fall, they'll sort of skitter out. You'll get a feel for that bait where he, you know, you can't be, oh, he's getting away. They come back mm-hmm. center mass, right? But we just don't want a consistent change of line angle throughout the course of a pass there. What other things?
Yeah, they do pretty quickly come back to center.
Yeah, they're going to square back up. But that's sort of the joy of the bait where you're going to, he's going to kick out and then you come, you bring him back up on the next sweep. Don't go, whoa, one sweep and it's bad. But if the bait's sort of getting away from him. But, you know, we're saying, in my brain, it is a more efficient, less headache, less calculating move to jig in current. Right? Now, the case could be made, man. I've caught a lot of fish, literally put my boat on spot lock and putting trolling baits out and let them hang out at mouths of things. It's stationary. That's a whole other conversation. So it can be done. But off the rip and easy use, I think that's going to be the ticket. What other things would I would say off the top of my head with that would be timber, right? Not a lot of you guys fish timber, but I'll say this. Both fuzzies and bondies are devastating in and around timber. And I don't mean just vertical timber, right? And you guys in Wisconsin, you have laydowns. Here's a tree falling into the river. Here's a tree falling into a lake. One of my favorite things to do that shocks people is to drive over to the edge of a tree. And I usually use bondies for this. And I'll just drive out to the outside limbs and jig around that thing. Right? You want to talk about scaring the crap out of you. And if they're there, they come out of there with their hair on fire.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that is an early season tactic. Take that one to the bank. Somebody, when you get him, write me an email because you're going to get one. Right? If you're thinking, oh my goodness, I know where to do that. If you got timber that especially it sort of falls, let's say it a lay down happened to happen where it's coming off the bank, but it goes out to even deep water, right? Where it just sort of hangs out over a steeper edge. Holy crap, man. That's such a dynamite thing to do. It's just get in there, check the outer branches, jig it. That's one of the occasions I will say is this. I'm not looking for bottom contact. I'm just jigging it as far down as the tree goes, right?
Sure.
Go in there and check that thing. Check one side of it. Check the other side.
And with that taut line and that vertical presentation, you can really feel when you're contacting the limbs too. And kind of you can move it slightly, you know, make corrections and hopefully not hang up too often.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing. If I am using a bondy, and the reason I like to use, and I just said I like to use the bondy more in the trees, is I'll bury the hooks in the body too. So they're not free swinging. Because at that point, if he's going down, unless it jams into a piece of timber, or if it's a small enough branch that gets inside the hook, the inside the bend of the hook, I've got a little bit of control, so they're getting fouled a little bit less on timber, right? But that's one of my favorite things to do, man. It's like, all right, dude, pull over this tree, do this real quick. You want to talk about getting lit up? That's a very, very fun little maneuver there. But you know, it's been associated quite a bit with jigging standing timber, which is true. But any submerged structure, I've found up north and throughout the Midwest period, cribs are unbelievable places to jig, especially when things get really tough, right? You'll find that a lot of your panfish, your perch, your crappie are orientating to these cribs, especially during cold fronts or bad situations. The muskies are right there just on the outer perimeter. And a lot of your trolling passes that you would typically do on moderate conditions can become jigging passes when things are really bad, right? And so you can just take that same trolling pass. Maybe you establish a good trolling pass over a line of cribs and you just jig down that bad boy. But the thing I'll tell you, if I'm fishing severe cold fronts or really nasty stuff, is don't just go by them, go around them, right? Do a full little 360 around that crib, right? You sort of should have a good idea how big it is. And just do that outer perimeter and then go to the next and then go to the next. That can be just absolutely devastating as well.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. As far as things that are going in my head, as far as like off the rip, this is the presentation I'm going for. But, you know, situationally with these baits, like I said, it's an afterthought. A lot of people just go, it's sandwich time, let's jig. Having one, and I'll say this, I got a fuzzy and I got a bondy laying out on the boat ready to go 24/7. You know, a lot of times that has come in so handy, Jay, over top of like humps and any subsurface structure. To the same regard I was just saying about going around cribs, It's not something I want to do every time, but if I've moved a fish, right? Let's say I come into an area, Canada comes to mind or some of these reefs. I come into an area, I move this low and slow behemoth, right? He comes up on a bulldog and he looks glazed over like a donut. A couple times I've converted these fish by getting over these humps with a Bondi bait and just keeping it down there, right? Because in my mind, just like trolling, trolling keeps fish down, right? We can be down past that level of light penetration where they're more likely to react positively. Jigging is that same thing where you go, okay, this is far easier for me to pick up a jigging rod and go around this reef one time than it is for me to set up some grandiose two-rod trolling pass, right? It's an intermediary. You know, it's not full tilt trolling, and trolling doesn't have to be complicated. I've said that before. But being set up for this and just having something on hand, or, you know, like, again, you don't have to put it on. You don't have to have that specified jigging rod we were talking about earlier. You could just sort of grab it and smack a fuzzy does it or a Bondi under your casting rod, do a quick turnaround on that thing and connect with a fish. You know, that comes to mind as far as like my tactical thing of like a follow up. You know, I don't mean like a cast back, but I mean just that in general, that follow up to, okay, well, he came in really low and I mean, we're over this reef. And I'm thinking about one reef that I fished quite a bit on Eagle that has turned into just a gold mine for jigging. You know, and you would go, it's July. Why are they jigging? Because they're tight to the rocks. They're tight to it and they're barely coming up where I can see them on the bulldogs or on big blades. So if I put it in their face, I might have a good chance with him. You know, that's sort of the thought process here, because really I think effectively jigging or being dialed in on jigging. Jay, what did it take us to cover the tactics of jigging? 3 minutes, you know, lift the rod, lift the rod and repeat. Maybe the only thing we did is this. And we'd be idiots not to mention, don't lift the rod and just let the bait fall on its own. We didn't say that, but that should be in the 3 minutes. As you lift this bait up, lower it back down. Don't let it free fall. Right?
Yep. Follow it back down.
Follow it back down. If we didn't say that, we should have, and we just did. You know, fuzzies are a little bit different in that regard. If you know you can get away with it, you might want to every now and again just let him go down on his own and just, you know, drop the rod real fast. Definitely with the Bondi, anything with a blade on the back, he's up, he's down. We're lifting and we're lowering, right? We're lifting and we're lowering. We're not just lifting it up and dropping the rod. Lift it up and drop the rod. Lift, lower, everything's a smooth motion there. But we just covered it yet again. That's the entire motion of jigging. So it's a thought process. You know, where and how can I best apply this tactic? Just like everything else we're doing. Where a lot of anglers, you know, 99.999% of their process is, where can I get this bucktail in this topwater to get it eaten?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas playing smart poker, playing smart musky fishing, you go, okay, I got trawling, I got casting out jigging. What makes sense? What is going to work? You know, what feedback or lack of feedback do I have from my electronics or from my follows that tell me these things are pretty bottom tight, I might want to get them in their face, whatever that might look like.
Mm-hmm.
And so adding it into that wheelhouse and that thought process, Jay, it's just the same as this. We've spent years, and I've had a lot of people we've talked into trolling, right?
Yeah.
You've seen the emails. First trolling fish, right? And then you get an email 2 minutes later and goes, dude, this is my 10th trolling fish. I can't believe it. Why did it take me so long? Thank you so much.
Sure.
They're excited about the first one. The 10th one, they go, holy crap. You woke me up. Slide the jigging into your game. All right. Slide it into your game incrementally, and you're going to catch fish. Now, you know, tactics wise, again, it's structure. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I like jigging weeds. You know, it's not like, okay, they're not hitting. I would much rather throw tubes, you know, in cold front conditions in the midst of summer in anything that's like vegetative cover. You know, give me a break. I'm not going to sit here and jig. I mean, I guess, and in theory, you could definitely jig an outer weed line and smack some fish, right?
Yeah.
However, you know, out of Weedlaw, I'm probably going to tube it or do some different stuff in the casting thing. But, you know, if I'm thinking hard bottom, I'm thinking rocks, I'm thinking reefs, I'm thinking, you know, non-vegetative cover, where it be man-made, like we said, with cribs, or whether it be standing timber. And that can be pretty devastating there, just sliding into your game. I would say this, that talking to guys over the years, whether it be on the boat or on the phone, trying to help people out, is that I think a lot of people, simply when they're trying to target fish jigging, they start out way too deep as well. Right? You don't have to be really deep. Now, it's not something I'm going to do in 3 or 4 feet of water, but it is something I'll do in 7, 8, 9, 10 feet of water instantly. Right? It works. It doesn't have to be 15. It doesn't have to be 25 feet of water. You don't have to be down there beating the bottom of a channel or beating the very bottom of a lake. You know, because often the very bottom of the place, those fish are going to be just absolutely dead to the world. They don't want to be pestered. They're not interested. So, you know, it can be very effective for hitting those outside zones. You know, again, man, it comes to mind, I'm just thinking thought process where it might get in your head. You know, if your line restrictions, again, just having it as an aside. One thing I will do with jigging is if I'm having people cast to an outside edge, right, where the baits, let's say the baits are theoretically landing in 5 and we're working over cover and structure that tapers out to 5 to maybe the boat sitting in 20, right? If I'm not 100% sure on my patterning, if I'm sort of on the fence where I go, might be good, might be bad, I will mix it up where I'm jigging out of the front of the boat while someone's casting, say, a big rubber presentation or a deep running crank. And that can be pretty superb under the guise of you're sort of covering two things at one time, right? Not something you should do every time, but it's a thought process of, I can effectively work this jig on the outside edge of this, right where this big major contact is of a structural area, while someone's casting that edge. And obviously whoever gets first feedback needs more attention.
Mm-hmm.
That's something to definitely consider there. Oh, goodness. I'm rambling. Now, we've covered some basic structural wear, wise, when, and all that stuff. We've covered some basics of the baits. Now, there's some different ways to trigger fish on jigs, right? If you know a fish is there via your downscan sonar or your live imaging, there's a few weird things I've noticed over the years, right? For you guys that have panoptics or live imaging, you know, you see the fish, he's pacing the bait, and he's looking at this thing, and you just get it all worked up. I can't tell you any fish I've caught by just stop doing anything. Stop moving the bait. If a fish comes in, he paces with it a few times, and maybe you gave it some quicker rips and let it fall aggressively or something of that nature to try triggering. The amount of fish I've caught by simply holding that bait right off the bottom dead still was freaky, Jay. Right? Seems to work especially well with a fuzzy does it with a blade on the back or a Bondi. He comes in, he looks at it, you just hold that thing dead still. Right? Maybe the blade's spinning, maybe it's not. I can't tell on my graphs. And if he runs away, you better start jigging again to get his attention. But often at times, you can hold that thing dead still and they will just unload on it. Right?
Yeah, that's cool.
And a lot of time, and what that came from, even before live imaging, I can think of two really big fish I caught. You know, here I'm jigging off the nose of the boat because I'm just tired, right? I've been guiding for God knows how many days in a row, and I'm sitting there jigging just to take shoulder pressure off, and I'll hold my rod still. I never see it coming. I'm just standing there for a second, taking a bite of sandwich and just get rocked. And I started putting it together that, man, you know, I just went over some good cover, good structure, and, you know, inadvertently I wasn't thinking about it, but I paused, which was like a change up. Right?
Sure.
We're always talking about in trolling, we're always talking about in casting a change up when you know a fish is there. If I make a good trolling passing over prime cover or structure, I want to do that zigzag to make something happen. You know, I got a following fish and he hasn't hit the thing yet while I'm casting. I do a changeup. At times in jigging, we need to add a changeup. We got their attention. They haven't eaten it yet. What do we need to do? So absolutely holding that thing prone, it is not moving, has been shockingly effective, right? The other thing I would say is this, is if you get a fish that's doing, I just call it the yo-yo, right? And it's very noticeable on panoptics and live imaging. That as the bait comes up, he comes with it. As the bait goes down, he goes with it. He's not really looking snaky. It's just like this silhouette of a muskie that's levitating up and down, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I get 3-4 of those, I'm not going to wait around to see it. If I'm seeing that levitation with the bait, when I go to that next upswing, if I got, let's say I'm in 15 feet of water, I will reel that thing up to 5 feet instantly. I want to try to get that fish as he's coming on that next, I call it levitating, up, down, we're up and down, we're up and down. On that next upswing, just reel that bad boy. If I can get that fish to start coming vertically under that bait, you'll be shocked as how effective that is, right? And a lot of presentations and a lot of times, if you can get a muskie's head coming up, just like in a figure eight, think about it. We plunge down and we bring it up in that outside corner, Jay, right? What yeah. that's doing, it's creating that change in the way he's seeing the bait, the angle he's approaching it, and he thinks it's getting away. And those levitating fish can be picked off that way pretty regularly, right? So give it that burst of speed on that way up, and instead of he's expecting it. I'm not saying he's expecting it, but we've played the game now 3-4 times. Up, down, up, down, up, down. He probably thinks it's just going up. Now you've thrown a changeup in there with a burst of speed up, just like fishing a bucktail, just like your figure eight. Directional change, speed change. If he comes back up with it now to stay on keel, stay on even, I shouldn't say keel, but stay on an even plane with that bait, he's going to have to speed up. And that turns that into a game of how bad do you want it, big boy? Right? And if he doesn't come back up with it, drop it right back down his face and keep playing that game, right? And try some other things. But you will see these fish shoot up behind that bait, and you can actually get them in a figure eight. Right? So that's why, like, my fuzzies always have a blade on it. I think it increases the action. But you can pull that fish off the bait, get him coming up. You're like, oh, he's on it. And now we're figure eighting a jig. Okay? Never talked about in the podcast before, but I do it all the time. If you try it on your boat, you're going to get lit up. Right? It's changing things up. We've engaged the fish, and I'm not saying this is the, you know, cold front of the century. It ain't going to work. But if it's moderately active fish, if he comes in and he makes that first initial move, bring him right to the rod tip and get down there and figure eight him. And so now we've done a speed change and a directional change. So instead of up and down, now we're coming up at an angle, boop, with more speed, and now we're into eight if he hasn't hit already by then. Now, the one thing I'd say is this, and I learned this the hard way. I didn't lose the bait, I should say. I've done this a couple times and done that burst of speed and gotten rocked, right? And now we're on 5 feet of line with a big fish that's hitting it downward. If you can train yourself to do it, when you reel that thing up, free sport the second you stop it. Because that's when he's going to hit it. So you've got a free, just like, you know how Jay, a lot of times, like Booker and some of these guys, they come in their figure eight and they're just immediately free spooled. They click into it in the first turn.
Yeah, right.
I try to make sure I remember that, because I had a really big fish come up and just hog a fuzzy does it. And now I've got 4 or 5 feet of line out and he's hit that thing full force going downward. And all it did was just bend the hook straight.
Yeah, and I get flack for not doing that too.
Right, and I'm eternally grateful he didn't end up just with a bait stuck anymore. I would feel awful about it. But thankfully it bent out. I didn't get the fish, but, you know, in a perfect world I would have, because I would have free spooled. I would have had a little give in that thing where we went bit the hooks before I could even react. But, you know, if you do that surge up to the surface, you know, with the panoptics or watching that, again, you can sort of read it. If you've been playing with him for a long time on your down scan, try that maneuver. Up, 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 stop. See what happens, and if he doesn't do anything, go into a figure eight, which, again, mm-hmm. my favorite move, hands down. Now, let's say he doesn't come back up with that. Lower that bait down. If you see him on your live, or you see him, he didn't follow it. Immediately, just hit that thing and dead stick that sucker back to the bottom. Go back to what you're doing, right? But that's one of the other maneuvers. So you got two schools of thought. Just hold that thing still. He's going to hit it because it's a dead rest, or we can just get him fired up a little bit more and just get things rocking and rolling. And like I said, it's weird. I personally, maybe there's other people that do it. I've caught a lot of fish by pulling them off the bottom with that jig, getting them engaged, buzzing it up to the top and get them in that figure eight. Now I've got the same control as the cast. I can play with him. I can add my same old outside turns. I can add my crap. And now we got a different game going on. Mm-hmm. So not conventional, but that's what I do. So
great.
And as an aside, we were talking earlier, Jake, I know you fish a lot. We were talking about stand-up jigs and all that other stuff. What's sort of your game plan on that when you're hitting muskies on those Esox Cobras and stuff?
I've got round jigs for it. The Kalins, an ounce and a half jig with action plastic, a mag grub. It's like a 6-inch grub. Magambles would work good too. It's kind of a downsized thing with no skirt. Just as simple as they get, one hook, fairly weedless. And I'll run that more than anything because I like to downsize a little bit where I fish at times. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot of drag, so you do a bottom contact. I fish the river a lot with not a lot of current, but there is some. And again, you're making good contact and you have good control over it. This is, like I said, it's pretty mild current. So it's not dealing with some of the roaring stuff that you deal with at time, which is a different program altogether.
And what you're doing though, are you yo-yoing it? Are you throwing up shallow and working it out?
No, more vertical jigging on specific areas, and like you said, off timber and stuff like that, where I have marked bait fish, because there's stretches of river that are fairly barren, get into the good spots, and the spots are quite obvious, and you got to, this is a river that's not overly deep, so a lot of it's 8 to 10 feet.
Oh, yeah, it totally makes sense, because, like, if you're vertical jigging that stuff, I the reason I ask, like, how you're working it, I often think of, like, the Esox Cobra, like you said, those round-headed jigs, which is not vertical jigging like we're talking about, but as a swim jig thing, just a big bass swim jig.
Work down slopes and stuff like that, for sure.
Which is not different, from a tactical standpoint, not that different, right? Where you can get that through some really nasty stuff. You can work it through some really nasty cover, some really nasty crap, where you just bounce this bad dude back to you. And now it sort of opens up a whole other ball of wax. Is it a vertical jig? Not in that sense. But like you said, if you're downsized, I've done it before taking it'd be the single hook, like the actual jig head from a tube, right? So you got the mid-depth tube and just putting a big Magambo grub on it.
Yeah.
And now, I'm not using the same heads. It was just like one of those things. I needed something in the boat. And I keep getting looks, and I could not get a bite. This is before they had the small bondies, and I was just like, I'm getting looks. Can't get a bite. Can't get a bite. Can't get a bite. What do I need to do? So downsizing, in an extreme case where you can do that shad body, you can do Magambo on a jig head, and it's going to be a vertical jig. It basically, if the thing sinks, you're in the ball game, So what do you do? Other than that, man, well, I hope that helps anybody that's looking to get into vertical jigging. Don't know if it's a master class, but it's a heck of a ramble, Jay.
I love it.
Just going at it full force, folks. We've gotten so many of those. There's always room for conversation on vertical jigging. There's so many things you can do. Like we talked about, anything that sinks is a vertical jig.
Well, it's getting me fired up for season, and it's just like it's a cold water presentation. It's something to think about, right off the bat. Well, in northern Wisconsin, and early season, baby.
Down in the south, man, it's firing up on that stuff. You get in this late cold water, pretty much. If you can't do the trolling thing, you're not going to do the trolling thing. You can't just go out and be like, I'm a caster, right? it seems like you're hamstringing yourself a little bit where you go, at least if you're just I'm a caster, well, you can at least hold the rod and do the vertical jigging thing. But adding that in incrementally, like I said, you're going to get more looks. You're going to get more fish. Anyway, I'll shut up for the evening. Ramble on. Ramble on. Get out there. And Josh Krieger just beat me. Idiot.
Saw him today. He stopped in and said hi today.
He's in there doing the do. But sign up for the Titans. Get your catalog. Muskie
and
shop.
And get ready
catalog.
For the 15% off sale starting Thursday night.
Boom. Shilling and shilling. Anyway, folks, say goodnight, Jay Bird.
Night, everybody. Thank you.
Later.
There she is, Miss Muskie.
Beast Channel 6542 for the Miss Muskie pageant.
Who will take home the crown as the fattest girl you've ever seen?
Set your alarm clock for 3:14 a.m. this Saturday for the Miss Muskie pageant. You don't want to miss this star-studded event hosted by cable access legends Todd and Dave.
David, looks like we got Miss Plover coming to the stage. She's pretty fat. What do you think?
Holy cow, slimy Plover, Dave. Look at that.
Look at the girth on that one, Dave.
And the teeth, I tell you. The teeth thing, it's an underbite.
Extra points there, boys. That's my favorite.
There's an overbite and there's an underbite. Let's be clear.
I'm always going over and under, if you know what
Dave,
I mean.
Shut up, Dave.
Be sure to tune in to Minocqua's Beast for the 2023 Miss Muskie Pageant.